baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Big news in Blue Jays land. Holy crap, Mr. Mack. Things are happening with this Toronto Blue Jays team.
Yeah, the shakeup is continuing. This is... Let's just get it out there. Gabriel Moreno, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. for Dalton Varsho. Massive trade. I don't think anybody saw this coming necessarily. I know this is... Dalton Varsho has been on your radar since the start of summer. Yeah.
Yes.
So are you excited about this?
I am very excited about this. Right. Listen, this was a very shocking move, and obviously... We all love Lourdes Gurriel Jr. He's been a part of this team for a very long time. And the fact that both Tay Oscar and Lourdes are now shipped out, it's a whole different looking outfield. But, buddy, getting Dalton Varsho out of Arizona, okay, a division that is incredibly difficult in a park that is not all that hitter friendly, and to bring him to Rogers, where he had 27 home runs last year, and In a year where they're banning the shift, which is going to help all left-handed hitters, and to put him in a lineup where he is so much better protected than he was with the Diamondbacks. Man, I'm really excited for this. So we're all over the place here. So let's just kind of take a breath, break down what we just witnessed happen. Okay. And it's funny because Adam and I recorded the mailbag this morning. And we had a big, long talk about Gabriel Moreno and
his future with the Blue Jays.
Yeah. Would we consider moving him? And well, that's kind of all irrelevant now.
Of course, like on Christmas Eve, Friday at like 4 p.m. is when the Blue Jays make their biggest move of the offseason. Of course it is. After we've recorded our show.
3 years ago to the day, by the way, is when they signed Hyunjin Ryu. They love their December 23rd signings.
Merry Christmas.
Okay, so let's break down Dalton Varsho. He plays center field. He plays right field. He plays catcher. He was a runner-up for the Gold Glove in center field. He's quick, and he's a good base runner. He stole 16 bases, 26 years old. He's got 4 years of control. Entering his ARB1 year, he's a Super 2 player. So he is under control with this team until 2027. Dalton Varsho, by the way, it was worth 4.6 F war in 2022. This is ninth best. And I know you're not a big fan of war, but wins above replacement. If we're going to put it in perspective, he was ninth best amongst all outfielders and had a higher F war than any 2022 Blue Jay. Bo had 4.5, Springer 4.2, Chapman 4.1. So he would be the most wins above replacement on this team. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. has always been an adventure in left field. Love his arm. We talked this morning about how he has improved defensively.
Sure.
And we might even get away with at age 29. Saying that he is an average outfielder. Now, that might be a bit of a stretch.
Yes.
But we'll give it to him.
Sure.
But let me tell you right now, an outfield of George Springer, Dalton Varsho, and Kevin Kiermaier, man, this very well could be the best defensive outfield in the American League.
Yeah, when all three of those guys are healthy and playing, absolutely. That's the 1 ounce of Debbie Downer I'm going to put on this video is just Kevin Kiermaier might not play 162 games. George Springer might not play 162 games. We should get 150 plus at a Dalton Varsho. Springer in right field or left field should increase the amount of games he does appear in. Mm-hmm. It's not going to hurt. Whatever he appears in next year is going to be more than it would have been if he was in center field. We can agree on that.
And I think the nail is in the coffin for any center field play for George Springer almost at all, barring a complete nightmare situation, right? I mean, they went to great lengths to make sure that they have two very good options in center field, as well as Whit Merrifield, who can play some center. So this team defensively takes a huge step forward. And there is another move coming, I think.
If there isn't, I love this offseason. I know everybody was critical of the Teoscar trade and we lost. And I kept saying, you know, much as I got accused of being a Rogers spy or whatever.
Yes.
A tool for the machine. We can't evaluate trades in a vacuum.
Yeah.
But now after a move like this, I'm just looking at. I really didn't think we were going to move both corner outfielders. I knew both were on the block. Moving both has surprised me, and I'm not upset by it. Greatly improved defensively in the outfield. I know people were critical of, oh, but we're losing all of Teoscar's power. Like, it's been replaced with Dalton Varsho, 27 home runs last year. I know it's like, okay, is that the real? He's young. We still don't know it for sure. But lefty bat, which again, a lot of people were ragging on how right-handed this lineup was. Kiermaier, lefty. Dalton Varsho, impact, power, lefty.
Yes.
You touched on the fact that, like, yeah, he can still play catcher if we need him to. Like, in a situation where Danny Jansen does have a case of bad tacos midseason and we can't have Kirk catching six games a week, well, I'm going to say Darton now because I've heard you say it three times today. Dalton Varsho is going to play maybe 20 to 30 games at catcher this year, or at least could if we asked him to, right? So I love it. I'm sad to see Gabriel Moreno go. I really am. This is absolutely a win now move. This is a move by the front office to say we are going to sell a little bit of some prospect future, because that's still what Gabriel Moreno was despite making his debut last
year. Yes.
For an impact player who can help us win now.
And under control for 4 years.
This is not a rental. This is not a rental at all. Dalton Varsho, and maybe this is because I know he's not been on a lot of people's radar other than probably you, aren't familiar with the name. This is, I think, a realistic expectation of what we could hope for Gabriel Moreno turns into 2 or 3 years from now.
That is a great point. That's
but
the
he's
dream,
lefty
right?
and that has more power. We're trading up like Moreno is going to be a higher average guy, less power. So this is more power, less average. Still a guy who, like we were talking before, if the Blue Jays don't trade one of their three catchers, are we going to just put Gabriel Moreno in the outfield or somewhere in the infield and try and figure
it out? There's growing pains to that.
There's growing pains with that. So with Dalton Varsho, we've skipped all the growing pains. We've seen the power at the major league level. This is
runner-up Gold Glover. He's already proven the defensive stalwart he is in the outfield. The fact that he can fill in at catcher is huge. And I'm going to take a little bit of a left turn here. And I know some of you will not like me bringing this up. I know last time Adam and I talked about this, there were a couple comments that we were racist. I just want to say that just because Lourdes and Teoscar were very excitable guys, they were fun. I loved watching it. I loved watching it. But let's be serious. Lourdes and Teo out, Kiermaier, Varsho, and Mattingly in. This seems intentional to bring a little bit more of a serious feel to this Blue Jays team.
I don't know enough about Dalton Varsho to speculate on his personality in the clubhouse, so I don't know. I'll play along with you, but
I'm just saying they intentionally broke up the barrio.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about an off-season shakeup. This is, I think, as big of a shakeup.
This is as big a shakeup as they come.
Guessed in October. What this does feel like to me in terms of intentional is this, and every single move this off-season has been a step towards re-signing Bo and Vlad.
It feels that way now, doesn't it? It really is starting to feel that way.
Teoscar was due for money. We didn't have to commit any money to him. Lourdes was about to be due for money 12 months later than Teoscar. We're not going to have to commit any money to him now. We have kicked the cat down the road, so to speak. And we haven't made any major additions in terms of Brandon Nimmo, in terms of Michael Conforto.
Zero big contracts have been added. Zero big contracts.
So,
I mean, Chris Bassett was our biggest one, right? And that's $23 million a year, or sorry, AAV of $21 million a year over the next 3 years.
But again, that money's off the books by the time Vlad and Bo are going to be due for their payday. So again, this just feels like this is, again, if we're talking about intentional, my interpretation is this is an intentional move to say to young Bo and Vlad, this is your team.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Your buddies are gone. This is all
you. Can you imagine the success of this offseason if they somehow managed to get those two locked up as well?
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they did sign big contracts in January, or maybe on New Year's Eve, for all I know. Probably by the time this video is out, there's going to be contracts for both of them, if I'm being honest. That's the way it goes. No, it's just, this is a major, this offseason, I think, was now after this. And I know people are going to hate it.
Yes.
Lourdes Gurriel was a fan favorite. Teoscar Hernandez was a fan favorite. All the hype in the world for Gabriel Moreno. 100%. I talked myself into it this morning that I kind of felt like I wanted him to be the guy that stuck around of the three.
Mm-hmm.
Dalton Varsho is exactly what this team needed. We looked at Brian Reynolds as being something that this team needed. Probably better offensively than Dalton Varsho, so it's not quite Brian Reynolds.
But Brian not even close. Defensively. But
Varsho, way better defensively, way more flexibility. Like, you're not putting Brian Reynolds to back catch. And if the asking price was, in fact, as John Morosi said, Ricky Tiedemann, we didn't lose Ricky Tiedemann.
Yeah, we've still got our number one prospect, our pitching prospects, right? Jasper Zulueta, Semro Burst, Ricky, they're all still within this organization, which is very, very important. And adding a guy like Dalton Varsho for 4 years, and yes, it was a hefty price. I am not downplaying the price of this trade. Nope. Okay. One of the top prospects in all of baseball.
It was probably an overpay. If I'm being honest, probably an overpay. But just looking at where the games get distributed, I don't see how you fit Gabriel Moreno in for 160 games next year. I don't know how
you
fit him in for 100.
Three catchers in this league? Like, how do you? It's,
I know. And the pushback on that is going to be, well, there's injuries and you always, you know, he's going to get playing.
Of course.
Sure, but that,
but the fact Varsho can also play catcher.
Exactly. Right. So no, this really is, honest to God, I think Dalton Varsho, as long as he continues on the trajectory he's been on through his first three seasons in the major leagues, a great addition to this Blue Jays team. And I do really genuinely feel like when it's all said and done, if you look back at career numbers, I bet you you'd be lucky to get the same kind of production out of Gabriel Moreno that you're going to get from Dalton Varsho. I just think, like you said, growing pains, learning a new position in the outfield, all that stuff. We get to skip 2 years of growing pains. We get to skip 2 years of him adjusting to major league pitching. He's here now. He hit 27 bombs last year. That's big time. You know, a big power lefty bat in the middle of this lineup. You put him five or six where Teoscar was. Man, this is a big time move. This is a big time move.
This is a really great move for this team going forward. There is more to come, you know, like Mark Shapiro spoke just yesterday on the fact that he felt like there were numerous moves in place and they just need to start pulling strings. He talked about the bullpen, and I think it's pretty obvious they've only got three outfielders. They are going to need to go out and get another outfielder.
Kevin Biggio. They got Whit Merrifield.
Okay, so you got your Kevin Biggios, you got your Whit Merrifields. I think that there will be a legitimate outfielder added, whether it's Jurickson Profar, switch hitter, formerly with the Padres. David Peralta is a little over the hill, but he's got some pop in his bat. He could fit maybe a trade with the Twins for a Max Kepler. There are options out there where you could add another lefty and another outfielder and really balance this lineup.
Look, here's for me the big takeaway from this offseason so far. We've significantly increased the left-handedness and balanced this lineup. We've added years of control. I realize Gabriel Moreno had several years of control.
Yes.
Still a prospect, so I can't quite evaluate that the same way. We're going to have Craig Ballard on Monday.
Yes.
And I can't wait to pick his brain on some of these things, because he loves taking the opposite side of so many of these points. It'll be interesting to see his point of view on Dalton Varsho and the rest of them. But
I'm excited, man.
Me too.
You touched on all the takeaways, and the only thing you didn't really hit home again is defense. Wow, does this ever make this outfield one of the best defensive outfields in baseball?
Big time.
You know, like, just the fact that you've got a guy in George Springer who plays a very good center field as your third option. Wow.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. I think it's great. I'm interested to see what the feedback is on this video in the comments
section.
Absolutely.
Let us know what you think. Please reach out, drop a comment. Are you happy? Are you upset? Are you sad to see Lourdes go? Are you thrilled to see Dalton come in? How do you feel this affects the Blue Jays going forward? Listen, I know it's going to be a little bit of what's the best way of putting it? A few days to kind of warm up to the idea. It hurts, right? It's like when Teoscar left. This is the walk-off. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. So Mr. Mack and I, we did mailbag today, which is now yesterday. Very confusing way for me to describe what just happened here. But basically, we laid down mailbag, and then the news about Dalton Varsho and Gabriel Moreno and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. all swapping teams, Varsho becoming a Blue Jay, the other two heading to the desert. And so we decided we're going to scrap mailbag and just air it a day later, so it has a little bit of room and isn't buried behind all of our show stuff. So without further ado, here's yesterday's mailbag today. Enjoy. Cheers. So my brother just recently was diagnosed with colitis. And I don't know if you know what that is. It's kind of like
the thing you look through and it changes colors, right?
Exactly. He's been diagnosed with the kaleidoscope.
Oh, no, that's how they treat it.
You just keep turning it until it comes into focus.
Yeah.
Anyways, long story short, he was a big beer drinker, but now he can't drink beer because it inflames his intestines, right? So he started drinking non-alcoholic beer. And I had a couple with him the other night, buddy, and I couldn't get over how tasty non-alcoholic beer has become. Like, have you tried non-alcoholic beer recently?
Oh, yeah. Budweiser Prohibition Brew or whatever in the black label.
Yeah.
That's like my go-to right now. Yeah.
There you go. I couldn't get over it because honestly, dude, like the last time I tried non-alcoholic beer was like 20 years ago. And O'Doul's. It was my grandpa's O'Doul's. Exactly. Right. And it was god awful. Like, it was why?
It was also 20 years ago, so you were a teenager. But
I was 20 years ago, and I was like, maybe this 0.5 will do something, right?
Maybe if I have cough medicine and O'Doul's, I'll get really messed up. Kids watching at home, don't do that.
But my brother just had me roll it on the floor because he was like, oh, yeah, now that kids today aren't big drinkers like they used to. I'm like, what do you mean kids today aren't drinking? He's like, oh, kids don't drink. They're out there playing Pokemon. They're doing it. He's like, they're doing it, but they're doing it sober. I'm like, doing it. He's like, yeah, like hide the Pokemon, right? I'm like, are you talking about sex right now? Like the kids are out there. I'm like, okay. So anyways, if you haven't tried non-alcoholic beer lately, it's actually very good. And my brother also has a messed up view of kids today, I think. So there you go.
very interesting.
Okay.
My biggest problem with non-alcoholic beer, though, I got to say, it's still full priced.
Yes, right?
It should be like the same. It should be the same as like soda. You know, get me non-alcoholic beer for like $1 a can and I'm in. But
I guess the brewing process is the same, right? It's just like the same amount of work and time goes into making booze with no kick in it.
Yeah, it's like my dad. I feel like my dad right now, every time he drives by a gas station nowadays and he sees the price of diesel and it's like more than gasoline, he's like, that is the cheapest part of the refinement process. Is the like, there's no way diesel should cost more than gasoline. Anyways,
I had a friend in 2000 change his truck from gas to diesel, and he was just like, oh man, I'm gonna be brilliant. And I remember like 5 years go by and then, you know, it just like caught up all of a sudden, and he's like, come on. Cost me so much to turn that over. Anyways, we have gone way off
on, you know, what now that we've weeded out all the non-regulars, Let's get to some Blue Jays talk, shall we?
Just any newbie here is like, this is garbage.
What did I click on?
And the regulars are also like, this is garbage, but they're like, they are eventually going to get to it. We know. We've been here
for the garbage. Yeah.
Hello and welcome everybody to the walk-off. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. We are switching things up a little bit over the holidays here just because it's the holidays and there's not a ton of news going on. So we did a short Correa to the Mets video on Wednesday, which was going to be our mailbag day. And then we were like, let's just push it to Friday. So today's show isn't a news show. It's going to be all of your comments and questions. Of course, we appreciate all the interaction throughout the week. We had we're almost at the point where it could be four digits. The comments where we're getting close to 1,000 comments that we need to comb through every week. So our apologies if we didn't get to you. What we've tried to do is find topics within these. And then there's a bunch of questions that hopefully fit all under these one topic. So hopefully we're getting to numerous at a time. You can always reach out to us on Twitter at Walkoff Podcast, Instagram, the Walkoff Podcast. Discord is always free to join. Tons of interaction in there. And that link is in the show notes. All right.
You know, we had a good comment on the YouTube from last week. It was like, how does one get a comment submitted for the mailbag? And I responded politely, like, well, you comment here, we call through the comment section, join the Discord, all the things you just read through. And then I can't remember who responded to that, but they said, honestly, just put hashtag mailbag in your comment and hope for the best.
Which is very true, because that is kind of like, that is one thing Adam and I do when we're combing through the comments, is we'll like comment on it on a good one, hashtag mailbag, so that we can find it later in the week. Yeah. But yeah,
but you guys have cracked our code for sure. Yeah. All right. Ricky Tiedemann. Let's start with Ricky Tiedemann.
Okay.
So reports are out. Pirates want a massive haul for Brian Reynolds. Obviously, the Blue Jays have been connected to Brian Reynolds.
Switch hitting center fielder,
top caliber asset that would be coming back for whoever gets him. Reports Yankees are in, interested in Brian Reynolds. Let's pull up the tweet here from John Morosi. So John Morosi says, if hashtag Pirates trade Brian Reynolds this offseason, they're looking for at least one top starting pitcher to headline the package, such as the Dodgers' Bobby Miller or the Blue Jays' Ricky Tiedemann, both of whom rank among the top 40 prospects in the MLB or MLB pipeline. So this is the kicking off point for our topic right now, Scott.
Yes. In Quite Discord, a we, Yeah, I was just
it's a pretty divisive topic. Obviously, a lot of fans very high on Ricky Tiedemann.
A lot of people,
a lot of people also, as they should be, recognize that prospects will break your heart more often than not. I have a big Nate coffee mug on my desk right now. So if this was 3 years ago when we were talking about trading Nate Pearson for Brian Reynolds, yes, there would have been a lot of people in the same camp saying no chance in hell we're trading Nate Pearson. But
you can't trade a future Hall of Famer.
Didn't you see that clip on MLB Network? Okay, so Mr. Krister in Discord says, I'm assuming consensus here is to not trade Tiedemann in a package for Reynolds.
Which, if you read the Discord thread after that question, he is incorrect.
pretty divided, I think, would be a better word than consensus. So Sentimental Hygiene said, nah, it would depend on what the plus was. And Ian added, I'm torn on it, but I would lean towards not trading him. Would rather try and work something out with Arizona. I'd rather give up Moreno rather than Tiedemann.
How do you feel about that, Adam? Would you rather see Gabriel Moreno move than Ricky Tiedemann at this point? Both obviously exceptional talents, both top 50 prospects in baseball.
Well, okay, we're going to get to farm system and the importance of that later in the episode. So okay, I don't want to spend too much time on that. I am more confident that Moreno will work out than I am that Tiedemann will work out. I mean, like at the major league level, be a functional MLB player, only because I've seen it.
Yes.
Moreno came up, had his debut last year, didn't look like a fish out of water. He looked good. That's a big step that a lot of people stumble with. Dominating Triple A. Look at Jared Kelenic with the Mariners, right?
100% great example.
So you could be the number one prospect in baseball. That transition from AAA to the MLB is a very difficult one for a lot of guys to make. So I'll just leave it there on my preference for Moreno and his value with this team moving forward. Rinks added in Discord, he said, if we had a rotation like the Astros already, I'd say go for it and trade Tiedemann. But he's such a high rated prospect, I'm not sure it's worth trading for Reynolds unless we are also going to trade Gurriel Jr. That could be interesting. Get a quality lefty bat in regularly that way. So I'm not quite sure I understand the logic of that. I guess the idea is make Brian Reynolds, make room for him every day. I would have to assume if we're trading for Brian Reynolds, he is 159 games a year.
He is
the most everyday option we have, and we figure it out from there. No?
One thing that I just want to reiterate here, and I know that we bring this up a lot, so apologies if you're sick of hearing it. Raimel Tapia played 140 games last year as our fourth outfielder. So having Lourdes Gurriel Jr. as our fourth outfielder, I am just fine with, in all honesty. And we've seen Lourdes when he gets hot. Listen, Lourdes gets a lot of flack for his defense, which has continued to improve throughout the years. I know that when it comes to outs above average last season, which I know that he had some injury problems there, still played a fairly major role with this team, though. I'm not sure exactly how many games he was on the field, but it was somewhere between 120 and 130, I think, without looking. And his outs above average were, I think, -3, which is a big improvement from 2021, where it was -8. He's got a cannon of an arm that almost makes up for any differential there in outs above average. I'm not saying that Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is a good outfielder, everybody, but I think that he is a better outfielder than maybe most give him credit for. As for Ricky Tiedemann, here is where I am at on it, and I know that Adam is in the same boat because we have talked about this many different times. So let's start with the fact that he's 20 years old. He has 78 innings pitched as a professional ball player. Now, I know how quickly he has risen up the system, but one thing to keep in mind is 78 innings is a pretty small sample size. This is a dude who has spent very little time even at double A. And yes, he has dominated, which is exactly what you want to see your top prospects do. So he looks really good. Does he need another full year at Triple A? Possibly. Again, he's 20 years old. I don't particularly wish to see him forced. Now, there are some big league scouts out there that truly do believe that Ricky Tiedemann is going to contribute to a major league franchise at some point in 2023. Those are big words and big hopes to put on a 20-year-old. He's a lefty who throws 98+. Those don't come around every day, and you don't necessarily want to get rid of them. Now, my reasoning for being on the side of not trading Tiedemann is because of the amount of money that they have invested in this starting rotation. And it has almost nothing else to do with almost any other aspect, because I truly do believe if they move Tiedemann, they have done the research and there is a reason to do it. And I'm all right with it. I'm not even, I will be shocked and I will be upset and I will come to terms with it, especially if Brian Reynolds is the return and we see just great production out of him. How can you not like that? Right? It's, this team is ready to win. And if they're pushing their chips in a little bit here, that's fine. Now, we are going to get into how important the farm system is, and we don't wish to get too deep into the weeds here. But that's kind of where I am at for Tiedemann. Adam, feel free to chime in here if there's any other direction you want to take on this.
No, that's basically it. That's
because it was you that pointed it out to me that the Blue Jays have almost 50% of their entire budget tied up in starting pitching. It's a lot of money. And to have a guy under control like Tiedemann over the next few years, who's going to be low cost. I mean, look at where this team would be without Alek Manoah. And I don't even mean his production. Just the fact that he's young. He's not even ARB eligible yet. Under control until 2028. Affordable as they all come. And that's what the farm system is for. Affordable young talent. And that's where Alek Manoah sits in here. And Ricky Tiedemann, the dream is he does the exact same thing. Now, again, if he's traded, I deal with it. Because I would like to see this team win a World Series. And if there's going to be difficult decisions made to get to that, to get to the promised land, nothing is easy, right?
Yeah, I mean...
Would love to hear where everyone else is on this. Like, do you, watching this right now, listening right now, do you feel like Ricky Tiedemann is a no-go? Is this an absolute no-go? Or is there, in your mind, a trade worth moving Tiedemann for?
Well, I'll tell you what. We traded away Simeon Woods Richardson and Austin Martin for Jose Berríos. Simeon Woods Richardson was 20 when we traded him away.
Yep.
Last year really struggled in the Twins organization. Sorry, did I say last year?
Yes.
The season that just ended is now last year, correct?
Yes. Yes. Okay.
So two seasons ago, 2021 season, really struggled. Put up an ERA of close to 7.
Yeah.
It looks like for them. This past season had a nice bounce back.
Because he's 20.
Well, he's 22 now, but yeah.
Yeah, 22.
The numbers have rebounded. He did make his major league debut at the end of the season there for Minnesota. Simeon Woods Richardson 2 years ago is how we feel about Ricky Tiedemann now, right? Was this young superstar pitcher who one day was going to really help this team. Jose Berríos helped this team a lot more last year than Simeon Woods Richardson would have last year.
Despite a very down year.
So would I do a very similar package for Brian Reynolds? Oh yeah.
Okay.
I absolutely would. I mean, shoot me if you want for saying I would trade Ricky Tiedemann, because I know that's
but I love that you wouldn't trade Moreno.
He's I just think Moreno is closer to contribute. Like I think yeah. could make that step. Like if you told me the package for Brian Reynolds was Aurelvis Martinez and Ricky Tiedemann. Anybody who's been with this channel for a while remembers the gut punch reaction that you and I both had to the Jose Berríos trade.
Yes.
Right. Austin Martin and Semien Woods-Richardson for Jose Berríos. Both of us hated it initially. What a gut punch.
Because you don't see top five prospects in an organization moved almost ever. So to see that happen definitely was a gut punch, and it will be again if they do it again. And it's going to need to wait and see what the return production is.
I guess here's how I want to frame it, and then we can move on. If the trade is Aurelvis Martinez and Ricky Tiedemann for Brian Reynolds, and we're just comparing that trade to the Jose Berríos for Semien Woods-Richardson and Austin Martin trade, I think I feel like less of a gut punch if we're for the Brian Reynolds trade.
I would say so too. I have more faith that Brian Reynolds would fill an area of need on this team that they are pretty desperate to fill. So yeah. We'll see how it goes. Now, listen, if they can get this done by moving a guy like, I don't know, like, would you be all right if that prospect instead of Tiedemann is Josfer Zulueta? Would you be all right if instead of that, it's Semro Burst, right? Like there are top 10 prospects, starting pitching prospects within this Blue Jays organization that maybe they could entice the Pirates with instead, but I get the feeling the Pirates are pretty locked in on Ricky.
I mean, yeah, if that's their guy, you know, everybody values people differently, right? So maybe because again, you don't know when we're just looking at like Baseball America's prospect rankings, that's an outside third party's evaluation of a prospect's value, right? We don't know. Tiedemann might be fifth on our list of pitchers. Maybe the Jays are really high on Semro Burst, Josfer Zulueta, and Adam Kloffens.
Despite all we know, Major League Baseball's rankings, the Jays could truly feel the higher ceiling is on one of these other prospects.
They might be thrilled. They may be like, wow, we could get Brian Reynolds and not have to give up Josfer Zulueta. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Pull the trigger. You just never know, right? So it'll be interesting to see how things shake out. I'd love to have Brian Reynolds on this team. I think he's a major addition that helps us win now. And we'll get more on that topic when we touch on the farm system towards the end of the show. But let's move on from there, shall we?
Love it.
Okay, Trevor Bauer reinstated. Can we move on? Is that enough on this topic yet? I'm already over it.
Yeah.
All right. So Trevor Bauer reinstated by the MLB. Obviously baseball's greatest villain to ever exist. Maybe short of Barry Bonds, but for very different reasons. So we got loads of comments here.
And that's why
neither of us really want to address this, but
because we're idiots, we're just comics, we're not really the type to delve into this heavy of a subject, and it is a very heavy and divisive subject. It's funny, we just talked how divisive Ricky Tiedemann is, but that doesn't even scratch the surface of divisive when you're talking Trevor Bauer. So we are going to address this. We did have enough questions and comments that we are going to get into it. Let's read over some of those questions.
All right. So first one from Darian on Twitter, DM'd and asked, Trevor Bauer getting reinstated and released from LA. Is he an option for the Jays? We were third in the running when it came to him before, and the Mets don't have room. That's never stopped the Mets before.
Yeah.
Anyways, the Mets don't have room and the Dodgers don't want him. So maybe it's Jays time. And then Bobichette Cards on Twitter also asked thoughts on Jays going after Bauer. Look, we had several dozen comments in this vein. Sorry if we didn't get to yours specifically, but here's the general response. Zero chance the Blue Jays and the Rogers Communications as an organization are going to touch Trevor Bauer with a 10-foot pole. Am I overstating that?
I think that you just nailed it 100% as to the possibility of the Jays going after Trevor Bauer. So let's talk a little bit about Trevor Bauer here. John Heyman tweeted that the Dodgers have until January 6th to decide if they want to keep Bauer. It is totally within Los Angeles's rights to pay him out and set him free on the free agent market for the other 29 teams to pursue. Now, at that point, it would be on a very low level contract. We're talking, I think, and I'd need to double check on the rules, but I think that he would need to take this first year at league minimum salary. Now, of course, does that hurt him? No, because the Los Angeles Dodgers are paying him out like $42 million or something like that.
Okay.
Bauer has been reinstated. I think it was 144 games in suspension time that he served. His criminal charges were dropped. There are two ways to look at this, and this is where things get dicey.
There are still civil lawsuits pending and like
yes,
legal stuff that needs to be sorted out and whatever. But yeah, sorry, continue.
Basically, and Adam and I talked about this beforehand because we really wish to tread lightly on this subject for a few reasons. Number one, obviously, we're well aware of what a triggering and awful subject this is for anyone who's ever underwent any sort of abuse in any sort of way. And obviously, there is zero place for it in the game. According to a lot of the stuff that has been released, it does look like there is a gray area here because it's either spoiled athlete is just a giant piece of shit, or woman takes advantage, sees an opportunity to get paid. But I think we both agree that it's probably somewhere in the middle. He probably stepped over some lines. It seemed like this rough sex stuff was somewhat consensual. It's a real gray area. And obviously, we are not qualified to make any sort of stance.
Moral stance. Like, he's going to return to baseball. As you said, the truth lies somewhere in the middle. We, as the general public, as anybody,
we'll never know. We'll never know how this played out.
Unfortunately, that is the case with so many domestic violence situations, sexual abuse situations. A lot of times, unfortunately, it does come down to he said, she said, which is unfortunately where a lot of predators do take advantage of gray areas and get away with a lot of stuff. That's crime in general. He's going to return to baseball. It won't be with the Blue Jays.
And it won't be with the Blue Jays, the Toronto Blue Jays, and this
Rogers Roberto Osuna, right?
Exactly what I was going to get to, right? This Rogers Communication Ownership Group has already proven that if there is even just a sniff of that sort of problematic situation, that they are done. They're going to clean their hands of it. We watched Roberto Osuna shipped out in weeks after it came out. You know, and
he was dominant for the Blue Jays.
He may be the best closer this team has ever seen outside of Tom Hankey, Dwayne Ward, and those World Series winning teams. Now, after watching the precedent set by this ownership group when it comes to assault allegations, there is no way they are dipping their toe in the Trevor Bauer waters. There's just no way.
No.
Now, on top of that, I think that Los Angeles is going to release him because there are a lot of rumors and a lot of talk that he wasn't very well liked in that clubhouse. So that's another little caveat to this whole thing, right? Is there going to be a home for him somewhere in Major League Baseball? I think there will be, but I think that the Blue Jays are very cognizant of the clubhouse that they are building. They've always been a team that really values quality character. And that is however you feel about Bauer and however you feel about the situation that he is in. Trevor Bauer is not really a beacon of light when it comes to a symbol of character.
One can only hope that he gets in deep, deep, deep conversation with the San Francisco Giants and then signs somewhere else.
The All Mets. Right. He will go to the Mets.
For the league minimum. Yeah, absolutely. For the league minimum. This story isn't going to go away, but I don't really care to address it ever again.
Yeah.
We are not the right people to do that. We appreciate the comments and the questions about it. If he signs with the Blue Jays, I'm happy to talk about it once again. But beyond that.
But I'm very confident there's no way. So.
All right. Let's move on from there then. Matt Chapman, point of topic as of yesterday.
Yes. Free agent at the end of this year.
Free agent at the end of this year. Big third baseman free agent class for next season, next off season. We got Rafael Devers, Matty Machado.
Yeah.
Matt Chapman will be probably the third.
Most sought after. Third baseman.
Third. Yeah, he's third squared. Terrible nickname. Anyways, it's probably Machado, Devers on a tier up here. And then below that is Matt Chapman leading the way. So
basically our video yesterday was just comparing the third base class that is shaping up for next year to what was the shortstop class this year in free agency, where we watched mega deals go to Trey Turner and Dansby Swanson and Xander Bogaerts and, of course, Carlos Correa. And so it's kind of shaping up the same sort of perfect storm, if you will, for Manny Machado and Rafael Devers, and to a lesser extent, Matt Chapman.
So we had some good conversation about the Blue Jays approach, because obviously this is going to affect the Blue Jays next year, whether we like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an extension for Matt Chapman? This is the time of his career to make hay. So do the Blue Jays do it? Do they go for one of the bigger fish? Do they stick with someone in-house, maybe a young prospect that they have faith in? Money for Matt Chapman was a divisive topic.
Yes.
As fans, we are all oblivious to the real value of a superstar athlete. If the last 24 months has taught me anything. But let's get into some of the comments here. So A New Era 03 on YouTube commented that they would definitely make a run at Devers. Him and Vladdy are good buds. Jays need an elite left-handed hitter. Vladdy's good buds with everyone.
That's a good point.
Like, I've never seen him at an all-star game giving anybody the cold shoulder, right?
Yeah.
Especially playing first base. He's chatting it up with everyone that gets on base every game long. Kudos to Vladdy for being such a likable guy. Jays do need an elite left-handed hitter. This is correct. Rafael Devers.
Hopefully that problem is addressed well before the next free agent class is out there. Because let me tell you, if we need to talk about the need of a left-handed bat for another freaking year, I'm going to pull my hair out. Anyways.
I'd rather talk about Trevor Bauer.
Oh, my God. Don't corner us into that corner.
Rafael Devers going to get mega money. $300 million, is that safe to say?
I would say that's probably a pretty good bet.
Maybe north of that, but it's going to be what everybody would consider a mega deal, quote unquote.
I think the minimum for 26-year-old Rafael Devers is a replication of the Manny Machado 10 years, $300 million with an opt-out at age 30.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty easy starting point for any discussion. And then you get guys willing to outbid each other from there. So, yeah, if he got $350 million next season, I wouldn't be shocked.
I love how everyone everywhere, Adam, is like, the Red Sox aren't going to do this. Like, the Red Sox are out. Nobody has faith the Red Sox are going to retain this homegrown stud talent that they have developed at third base.
interesting. I was just reading an article this morning, and by which I mean watching a video, and they were talking about, I need to put that on a coffee mug. But they were talking about the Red Sox aren't sold on Trevor Story as shortstop. I know they just spent hundreds of millions of dollars to bring in Trevor Story as a like emergency backup shortstop. If Bogarts leaves, and now they're like, yeah, sounds like some members of the executive committee there are not thrilled with the idea of moving him back to shortstop and prefer the idea of Kiki Hernandez. In
what is Chaim Bloom doing? I can someone explain to me? Anyways,
Devers to the Yankees next year. That'll be the thumbnail for this video. Worked last time. Let's rerun it. Okay, so let's talk Matt Chapman though for real, because how much money does he get, right? This is the
big question.
You threw out casually George Springer,
the Springer deal.
Comparable contract, which would be 150 over six.
Yes.
So and Sam, I think that Sam S says 5 years, 125 million. Adam Kahn on YouTube says Chapman gets 200 easily. 25 mil over 8 years. Not sure the Jays will go there though. I can't see the Jays giving a 200 million contract to anybody before Bo and Vlad.
Yeah.
So I love Matt Chapman. I would, if he was a forever Blue Jay, I would absolutely have a Matt Chapman jersey.
I agree. If for like, some reason they actually manage to find a way to lock this man up long-term, I'm buying a Chappie jersey. 100% I am.
I just can't see it, man. Like, unless he falls in love with Toronto the way Jose Ramirez fell in love with Cleveland.
Yeah.
And takes a similar
unless
deal.
He's prepared to leave $100 million on the table.
But even then, like 140 over seven for Matt Chapman. I don't think the Jays are doing that even.
Now, if Sam S is correct and we can lock him up 5 years, 125, you do that tomorrow. You freaking sign that deal tomorrow. You lock 29-year-old Matt Chapman up for $25 million a year over the next 5 years, and you freaking thank the baseball gods that you managed to somehow get that ink onto that contract. But personally, after watching what just happened in the baseball market this year, I don't think there's any way. Brandon Nimmo got $162 million, gang. And nothing, I mean, I wanted Nimmo. I just can't believe he got that much, considering if he was a free agent just 1 year ago, let's be honest, 12 months earlier, Brandon Nimmo, I doubt gets $100 million. He probably gets the DJ LeMahieu contract.
Yeah. Probably. Matt Chapman is a great 2 year stopgap. Hopefully by time for one of the prospects, you know, at the time, I think we were looking at maybe Jordan Groshans
or Jordan Groshans,
you know, new guys are stepping up. Addison Barger is a name that gets thrown around. He had a great year last year. We'll see what he can do this year. Aurelvis shows amazing power in the bat.
Yeah.
I mean, the plate discipline and the batting average does need to come up. I don't know. I don't think Matt Chapman's with the Blue Jays next year. Maybe we bring back
sad,
Josh Donaldson on a cheap deal. Ugh. I know. I don't like the idea of a 39-year-old Josh Donaldson either necessarily, but if none of our guys are ready, like, we just have other needs, Scott, that
it is so crazy to me, dude, how much this third hole at third base that I wasn't even thinking about it.
Oh, did it ever sneak up on us, man?
And now I'm just like, oh my God,
what are we going to do?
We've already watched what happens when this team goes without a third baseman.
Yeah. I don't want to see Espinal at third base or Kevin Biggio. Remember Kevin Biggio at third base as our everyday third baseman for a season?
And I love Santiago. By the way, everybody, I love Santiago Espinal. He plays a very good defensive third base. That's not what I mean. It's just we have seen how important production offensively out of that spot is, and that is not Santi.
I think Santiago Espinal is simultaneously underrated and overachieving. Can both of those be true?
Yes, they can both be true, of course.
Okay. We did get another comment on that video about Aurelvis Martinez. So D Cooper wants to know, was Aurelvis Martinez not mentioned in this video with regard to third base? Maybe I blacked out when he was discussed. I just commented, I don't know. I said, we can't be expected to keep track of all the garbage falling out of our mouths. We barely think about what we say before we say it, let alone afterwards. And D Cooper,
if we didn't mention Aurelvis Martinez, that is an option next year at third base. I think he still starts at double A this year. He has slid down the prospect rankings when it comes to Blue Jays prospects, and which is expected to happen. You know, there's always shifting around, and he still is a top 10 prospect and has a ton of power. I know Adam and I have talked about this before, that he was second in all of double A baseball in home runs. And the fact that he was 20 when he did it is incredible. Now, that said, swing decisions are a big question mark for this man. And there is a giant gap that needs to be filled before he probably even gets the call to AAA. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's some development that still has to happen there is what I'm saying.
So funny end to this little dialogue here with D Cooper. D Cooper says, well, consider me your channel's best dumpster, because I enjoy every bit of garbage that falls out of your mouths. Pleasant. And then this morning I woke up to a DM on Instagram from a very anonymous looking account who just sent me a link to a website and said that we should get one of these for our offices. The website, Scott, I just sent to you on Facebook. I'll pull it up here for everybody looking at home. This is dumpsty.com. And these are miniature desktop dumpsters. So a little dumpster for your desktop. Showed this to my wife.
To catch our verbiage.
Yeah, I showed this to my wife. I asked for Christmas. I said, I know it's last minute, but maybe. She took one look at the price tag, $200 for a little miniature dumpster this size. She said, no way. So It was a fun way to wake up this morning, anyways. But no That's dumpster great. On my desk this Christmas. Okay, let's.
By the way, everybody, we really do put a bunch of research and effort into this. But you know, you get in the middle of talking about stuff, and next thing you know, you're off on a tangent, and
exactly
out comes the garbage.
Exactly. All right, let's move on from there. Next one is going to come in from Patreon. So. Wyatt on Patreon wants to know what,
which is... by the way, everybody, Wyatt, really appreciate you and all of the Patreon. We are going to have a brand new set of what benefits? Do you call them? Benefits perks for being a member of the Patreon. That will be released in the new year here, but we do appreciate everybody. And right now, I know one of the big advantages is you always get on mailbag. If you send us a DM in your Patreon, you
within
get bumped to the
reason.
Top. Within reason.
I mean,
we haven't had any unreasonable comments. Yeah,
don't message us on Trevor Bauer and expect
us to
read
your comments. You're gonna constantly try to get us to talk Trevor Bauer, you're out.
We're canceling your subscription. All right, let's this one here from Wyatt. So Wyatt says, I hear the term, quote, playoff experience used a lot when it comes to certain players, for example, Kevin Kiermaier. And I was just wondering if you guys could explain with a little more detail what kind of scenario or situation would KK's playoff experience help the Jays when they are in the actual playoffs?
I have so much value personally I put into experience. I truly think And this could just be from 15 years of stand-up comedy. And I know how difficult it is to accumulate the experience needed to react in the way you should react when throwing an obstacle or throwing something that you haven't seen before. So often, when it comes to any profession, you can learn the basics quickly, but you can only learn the little minutiae by actually experiencing that and going through it. So I'm going to give an example here that all Blue Jays fans will remember. 2015, the Toronto Blue Jays are in game 5 of the ALDS, facing off against the Texas Rangers, the hated Rangers. 7th inning. Chew at the plate. And Russell Martin stands up, throws the ball into his bat. Something that I'd never seen in baseball before. Winds up giving up a run. The Rangers take the lead. All feels lost. And I look back on that moment, and there is no one in baseball that I would have rather have behind the plate at that moment than Russell Martin. There's not a catcher I can think of in that situation I would have preferred make that mistake. For numerous reasons, Russell Martin had been there before. He had been in a pressure cooker, game deciding, series deciding moment. And he was able to take that experience and that mental toughness needed to overcome obstacles in the highest of pressure situations and lead the Blue Jays to a win and a massive bottom of the 7th. You look at the players that they had in place for that, and it was all sorts of experience across the board. So when playoff experience gets brought up, by no means is it everything. By no means is it everything. But you don't know how to react in a situation unless you have been there before. And I think that Kevin Kiermaier being added to this team is doing just that. It's adding to the library, the encyclopedias they have of how to deal with certain situations. I know that's a very old reference. But, you know, like it's Google search. It's how do you deal with this? And there being someone who can answer that. That is massive. Anything to add here, Adam? I'm talking myself in a circle. You're muted still.
Good catch. Hey. I had a sneeze in the middle of your rant.
Anyone on audio had zero idea.
All right. Well, now they do. All right. Peek behind the curtains. So Russell Martin, yeah, great example. Calming presence in a disaster of a situation. Was it Rougned Odor who had like 3 errors in the next inning?
Yes.
Kind of just a contrast of lack of playoff experience. Like just sometimes the moment is too big for a guy. Russell Martin had, I think, close to 58 playoff games in the postseason. All that time, Dodgers, Pirates. Even the Pirates went to the playoffs with Russell Martin. How good was Russell Martin? Anyways.
Right?
George Springer, 65 postseason games. That's good playoff experience. Obviously, yes. World Series rings with the Houston Astros. Kevin Kiermaier, 29 playoff games. That's a lot.
It is.
Like, it doesn't sound like a lot, but it is, you know, over the course of 4 or 5 seasons, right? It is I'm going to tread carefully here because I love Alek Manoah, but he pitched the opening game of that series against the Mariners. 0 playoff experience for Alek Manoah.
didn't have his A game. I'm not about to say the moment was too big for him or anything like that, right? But playoff experience does matter. And I do think that even just having that one game under his belt is going to make a world of difference going into next year for Alec Manoah. Mm-hmm. You know, fingers crossed, we make the playoffs, take nothing for granted.
Another great example of playoff experience is the Bowen Springer collision in center field in that game two of the wild card series, right? Because now Bo Bichette, he's going to read, and it does suck. Listen, it sucks that this is a moment that had to be experienced, but truly he will never forget it. And he will always know the score in the game. He will understand that in a situation like that, you're up by three. And if two guys score, you still have the lead and you don't have to go all out to make that play.
Yeah. Okay. So you're saying that collision he's going to learn from and he's not going to do the same next.
I do. Yeah.
Oh, gross. Okay. I know I have an unpopular opinion on that whole collision. It was a absolute freak accident. Like, it was as crazy of an incident as the Russell Martin throws the ball. So that's a great story that you started with because it all comes full circle. It is as one in a million as it gets. I don't want Bo Bichette doing anything differently on that play. Like, I think the best version of Bo Bichette is the Bo Bichette with the high leg kick, the swinging his freaking face off. Like, playing with reckless abandon is the Bo Bichette that I want. I want to see it until he physically can't do it anymore. I don't want to see him pulling up and playing it safe. I don't want to see that from George. I don't want to see that from anyone.
We rarely disagree, but I could not disagree more with you there. I really think that if Bo Bichette didn't learn from that moment right there in that elimination game where you were up 8-1, and you can't look at the score and see that you're up by three and be able to judge in that moment that it is better to allow two runs than it is to go all out and wind up them tying the game. I can't see it. I'd be so
shocked. I want my game changers changing the game. 1% of 1% of 1% of the time is not going to work out in our favor, but I want them going for it, man, because I mean, I don't want my pitchers worrying about base runners, but I want my defenders trying to catch the ball.
Let's give a different scenario. Let's say Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is in left field. There's a runner at third. There's a runner at second. There is one out. You are up by three runs. And instead of holding up and letting the ball bounce and letting one run score and there be runners at third and first with one out and the double play still in check, he goes full out, makes a diving attempt at the ball. The ball misses. It goes down into the corner. Now he's running around. Both runs score. Now there's a runner at third base with one out and the tying run at third, right? Like, this is what I'm saying. Read the game. Like, and that's the only
Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is not a game changer. You just totally changed the formula of the scenario in an unfair way, my friend. You went, Bo Bichette is a game changer. He is a superstar. And roast me in the comments for how bad his defense is if you want. It is not for lack of effort.
Okay, George Springer in right field then.
Sure.
Different example.
George Springer, whatever. I want George Springer diving for the ball. He is a great defender.
One out and run it. No, you don't.
Reading
the game.
Okay, there is situational baseball. If he thinks he has a chance at making it, I'm going to trust George fucking Springer's opinion to think he can get it. I've never seen George Springer lay out for a ball that's gone past him. I have with Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Anything that touches the ground is a scary play for Lourdes Gurriel Jr. George Springer, if he thinks he can get to it, I don't see him diving for a ball that he can't get. If he thinks he can do it, absolutely. I'm glad he went for it.
Okay, I used the wrong name. That was not why I brought up that example. I'm just saying that I don't give a shit who it is, superstar or not. I want you to be able to look at the scoreboard, realize where you are in the game, and make the right play based on the situation. And that's what Bo Bichette's only mistake was in that scenario, in my opinion, was there was no need for him to go all out when there was still up by three. And you're just, anyways.
All right.
I want my guys going all out. I just don't want them going all out if it's going to possibly, if it doesn't work out, lose you the game when there's no reason for that.
I'm speechless right now. I'm glad we disagree on this. People in the comment section, let us know where you stand on all this. This is not playoff experience related anymore. This is just
the experience.
We're back
related.
On the collision. Yeah. Anyways, let's.
It's not about the collision. I think I'm glad Bo gave it all he could. I don't blame him at all.
You just
for
said
that.
You weren't. Now,
well, I will blame him if he does it again. Hell yeah. What, you can't learn from your mistakes?
We're going to split a beer when he does it again and makes the catch, because 99 times out of 100, it's not a freak collision. Like what?
A non-alcoholic beer.
A non-alcoholic beer. There you go. We'll split some diesel in the parking lot. All right, let's move on from there, shall we, Scott?
Sure.
All right. Next one. Regarding the farm system. So Murray Graham commented on YouTube. This was about the spending of money. So Murray says, I agree that we've entered a new era of spending. That being said, the salary cap of $233 million will need to be raised, and there will also need to be a minimum salary payroll, a salary floor, if you will. I've never considered the Jays big spenders. The fact that they are number five in the MLB as of now without any real mega contracts really scares me. It used to be the Yankees and Red Sox that drove salaries up. Now there are many teams doing that. I don't see a way the Blue Jays locking up Bo or Vlad with these insane contracts being handed out this year and maybe next year. If they manage to do both of those deals for Bo and Vlad, then the rest of the team will be made up of minimum salary or less than adequate players in order to compete in this division. So Murray's thoughts are, if we hand out mega deals, and let's just, for the sake of argument, let's just call them $300 million contracts for Bo and Vlad. Sure, it might be more, it might be a couple million less, but let's just not worry on those details, okay? If we hand out two of those, that we're not going to have any money left for anybody else, basically. And the point that I want to get into about the farm system is that this is where a franchise, an organization, sets itself apart from the rest, right? You look at teams like the Dodgers, you look at teams like the Astros. These are teams that pay when they need to pay, and then they have a replacement level of talent for their superstars that are being developed in the minor leagues. So in terms of the Blue Jays, it's guys like Addison Barger. Maybe I'm giving him too much credit to even have his name in the list here, but Aurelvis Martinez, Gabriel Moreno, Ricky Tiedemann, Semra Burse, etc., right? In theory, by 2027, Springer's contract, that whole big deal, is basically replaced by Vladdy's. And Ryu's contract is basically placed by Manoah's new contract. But then the value that we're getting right now from Manoah, from Vladdy, is, again, hopefully being replaced by Ricky Tiedemann pitching 150 innings at a 2.5 ERA for the league minimum, the way Alek Manoah is right now, right? Like Aurelvis Martinez hitting 40 home runs for $800,000. That's how we sustain this competitive window, right? Gabriel Moreno being a superstar catcher for us for
this
league
roadmap,
minimum.
This roadmap isn't new, like Adam just said, right? This is Los Angeles Dodgers baseball 101. This is how the Houston Astros were able to watch George Springer and Carlos Correa, the heartbeat of that 2017 World Series champion team, walk and then replace them with Jeremy Peña, World Series MVP, and Yordan Alvarez, just one of the biggest sluggers in all of baseball. There is, everyone talks about the window of contention, okay? The doorway of contention, the garage door of contention. Right. Yes. I want the biggest hole in my house for contention possible.
Contention also means like arguing, doesn't it? Like my wife had some contention towards me last night.
She had
night.
A point of contention with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want a single point. I want a window of
it. You're like, can we close this garage door of contention?
All right. Sorry. Continue your
my rant, if you will. There. Anyways, basically what I'm getting at is the Blue Jays front office has made it very clear that what they're trying to do is extend this window of contention to as long as you possibly can, to follow in the footsteps of the Los Angeles Dodgers, who have been a contending team now for a decade. A very, very difficult feat to attain in today's baseball world. Mm-hmm. And you truly need big bucks to do it. And you truly need an elite farm system to pull this off. And that is the goal of this Shapiro Atkins regime. Now, if they don't pull it off, fire them both. I'm not here to, you know, stick up for this front office if they don't pull it off. However, I do understand what they're saying and I do see what they're trying to accomplish. And, you know, we're all Blue Jays fans here. Frick. We want to see this team compete for as many years as possible. It's just more fun. Playoff baseball is the best.
September baseball is pretty fun too. Cause
yeah, September
there's baseball, no downside.
That pennant race is pretty darn fun. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I guess that's all to say on the value of a good farm system, right? That's I mean, even in a non-World Series, contention extending viewpoint, like the lack of AAA farm system just last year really painted us into a corner at the trade deadline when we had no one close that we could really make deals for, right? We talked about earlier in the show moving Simeon Wood Richardson and Austin Martin. And yeah, that's the value of having a farm system, is having a guy that you can move at the deadline. And we didn't have that last year, but everyone's one step closer this year. So we'll 100%. See. Anyways, farm system, very important. All right, let's move on to this last one here and then we'll wrap it up.
Okay.
Bo Bichette needs a payday. We talk about Matt Chapman coming due this year. Bo Bichette, Vladdy, both due 3 years from now. So Marcus G, longtime listener, watcher of the show.
Big supporter. Love Marcus.
Says, great show, guys. Just a quick question for the hashtag mailbag. Look at him cracking the code. Says, armchair GM, at this point, do you just offer Bo the Correa contract this offseason? Maybe a variation like backloading the contract more or adding an extra year to reduce the AAV. And if he rejects, we just plan the next three seasons with the expectation that he's gone after these 3 years. He says, knowing someone won't resign does also help with information with cost certainty. So that's a really good point. Like right now, we are in a predicament with Matt Chapman. Right, where it's like, well, maybe we can offer Matt Chapman a competitive contract because we got to leave something for Bo and Vladdy, right? But if you've already offered Bo your best offer, you said, Bo, here's $400 million over 14 years. Take it or leave it. And he goes, no thanks. We go, cool. Well, have fun for the next 3 years. And we're going to go give our money to Matt Chapman instead.
Yeah. And there is some real value in doing that. And I really like that armchair GM way of thinking. Marcus has kind of summed it up beautifully. There is at least with making him a big offer like that, that you are aware where the chips are going to lie for the future and you can plan around that. the last thing I want to see this front office do is sit on their hands and then be caught in a real situation where they're scrambling a little bit. I don't want to see this organization scramble, because it never seems to work out when that is the situation that they are in, or any organization for that matter. And I think you are correct. If Bo is not going to sign long term, I think the best thing you can do is grab the guys who will.
Yeah, I just want one caveat with this approach is, and I'm not saying this is what the Jays are going to do, so whatever. I know they're doing their own thing. But if this is the approach to take, I just genuinely hope that the offer they make him is realistic.
Yes.
Like, I do not want to see them try and lowball him and get a deal out of it. Offer him our actual best offer. This is going to be like an ultimatum, take it or leave it type deal, let's offer him the most that we genuinely think that he is worth or that he would sign.
Because if it comes out like it did with the Red Sox and they're offered as Xander Bogaerts, exactly, where they offered him 6 years, $160 million or something like that, where it's literally almost slap half in the face of what the competitors were offering. Like, I don't offer him anything if you're going to insult the guy.
Yeah.
Right. Agreed. Like, it's just bad business for free agents and for locking up your own homegrown talent. It's a bad look.
Agreed. And it has trickle down effects too. Like you said, it sets a bad precedent within the organization. I think the Red Sox have screwed themselves. Like, we're going to see with Devers when he leaves, right? Mm-hmm. At least you can go to Alek Manoah at the bargaining table and be like, look, we tried our best. I know you like Bo Bichette. We tried our best to keep him. We offered him a good contract. He was not willing to do it. But
here's his money. Take his money, Alek. Take his
money. All right. Anything to add to that? Or should we wrap it up? We're getting a little bit long in the episode anyways.
Let's wrap it up there. Honestly, thank you so much to everybody who has interacted with us throughout the week. It's always fun chatting with everybody. I know I really enjoy on Twitter when I get DM'd and we get to talk baseball a little bit. So please feel free to continue to do so. That's at Walkoff Podcast on Twitter, which, by the way, all of you following on Twitter, I want to give a little tip of the hat and say thank you so much. We are almost at 1,400 followers on Twitter. We have almost 150 more than I am following. I try to follow everyone who follows us. So if for some reason I'm not following you and that upsets you, just shoot me a message and it will be done.
There you go.
But we did start off with literally, I followed like 700 people and we had zero. And the fact that we have more followers than I'm following now is pretty darn cool and pretty humbling. So thank you very much.
Pretty cool. Very cool. All right. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Yes.
We'll see you guys on, when are we back, Scott?
Boxing Day, the 27th. What would you rather? We should have discussed this at a different time than right now. At the end of the episode.
Right now. I don't know. Let us know in the comments when you want us back. Should we just take a week off, or you want us to come back Christmas morning? All right.
Well, we'll see you next week, no matter what happens. And all the best, everybody. A very happy holidays. Take care of yourselves.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and cracker shows to pitch to him. Long move.
Thanks for listening.